Oh, good morning, everybody. My name's Angela, and it's lovely to see you again this morning here. We've been in a series looking at what can I bring? What can I bring to God in response to what he's done for us? And the question is really, I suppose, it's a discipleship series. How should we live? And in that series, if we have the first slide, we've looked at our homes, we've looked at our private space. Is it something we keep behind closed doors, or do we invite people in? We've looked at our hands, what we do, how do we partner with God and his purposes in the places we already are, in our communities, in our relationships, what's he put in our hands to use? We've looked last week at our holdings, which was about all that we've accumulated in life. And we are in a workplace where everybody has accumulated a lot in our part of the world. So how do we use our finances and our possessions to partner with God in helping to bless his world and share with others? So those are three things that we've looked at that we like actively do. And today we're going to be looking at our hearts, which I guess is what lies behind it. What is behind what we do? What's motivating us? And I think this is a bit of a two-way process, because we do the things we do because they express our love for God and a desire to follow him. But they also, as we do them, they shape our hearts. So as we choose to be loving and giving, even when we don't feel like it, as Jane said, it's like a two-way process. It comes back and it helps us, it shapes us. As Paul says, it trains us in godliness, and that has great value. It's part of our discipleship journey. So we bring our hearts to God, but we also practice bringing our hearts to God, and that brings about the change and transformation that we see in our lives. We're going to look today at two incidents in Luke's gospel. They're in Luke chapter 10, if you want to look at them, but we're going to have the words on the screen. And the first one is when someone comes to Jesus to ask him a very similar question. How should I live? So if we look at the... There we are. It starts off one day. An expert in religious law stood up to test Jesus by asking him this question. Teacher, what should I do to inherit eternal life? Now, in the Jewish religion, as there is now, as there was then, there are a lot of rules and guidance about how to live well. And this man, he would have known all of God's instructions for the different areas of life. So it's a bit of a question. What answer was he expecting? And Jesus would have known that the man knew all the different rules of religious life. So he did something which he often does when people came to him with a question. And he responded with a question of his own. He says, what does the law of Moses say? How do you read it? Well, the law of Moses was written about 1500 years before this incident, about 3,500 years ago now. And this man was an expert. He knew that the religious law showed people how to get hold of goodness and purity and life. That was God's purpose in giving the law, that people could get hold of purity in life and extract themselves from being contaminated by the world of difficulties and darkness and death. There are a lot of rules, over 600, and they can be summed up in these two sentences which the expert quotes back to Jesus, and these come from the Old Testament itself. It says, the man answered, you must love the Lord your God with all your heart, all your soul, all your strength, all your mind, and love your neighbour as yourself. Now those quoting from the Bible, and Jesus says to him, yes, you're right. So it's a bit of a question. Well, why did you ask? So the man goes on. He doesn't want to, be shown up. So he continues. He says, who is my neighbour? He's pushing in with another question. And Jesus answers that. Who knows what Jesus says in answer to that question? You're allowed to shout out. It's not rhetorical. What does Jesus say in answer to that question? Who is my neighbour? Yeah, he tells the story of the Good Samaritan. And when I was preparing this, I saw, interestingly, that this story really reflects what we've covered in this series. I don't know if everybody knows the story. It's a story that Jesus told. It's not a true incident, but he tells this story. about a man who's travelling on a road near Jerusalem, and he's attacked and robbed and left for dead. He's, assaulted. And after he's lying by the side of the road, three people pass by. Now, these people are just going about their lives. They're not on show. They're not at work. So in a way, it's their home lives. It's their private lives. It's what they do when no one's looking. And the first two people who go past are religious people. And that's the sort of people that this expert would have identified with. So do they stop? What do they do when no one's looking? No, they don't stop. They know the commandment, love your neighbour. But for some reason, they don't apply that in this moment to this man. And why don't they do that? Well, they're religious people, and the law is a lot about being set apart from God, staying clean and pure, and not getting contaminated by the mess of the world. So it's possible that they thought, no, if I do this, I'm going to be going against God. I won't be able to go and be in his presence because I'll be dirty. But they've missed, haven't they, the heart of God. Because God's purpose for people in the world is to bring healing and restoration and salvation and mercy. That is what all the law is about. It's how to make the world work well so that we live in community and things flourish. And that means getting stuck in our messy world. Like we've saw when that woman on the platform spoke to the person next to her. She was engaging with the mess of his world just because she felt like she had something to offer. Now, after these two, a third passerby comes by, as we know, and he's a Samaritan, which is somebody who was like despised. This expert wouldn't have liked to have been compared with him. And he felt compassion. But he gets his hands dirty. He engages with this person who needs it. He's doing what the law was designed to do. He's showing how people can bring God's justice and mercy and healing into our world. He treats this man, I guess, like he would like to be treated himself. He's not at home, but in a way, to me, this spoke of like what we do when we're at home and no one's looking. No one was looking at this man, but he, in his heart, his true heart, was to reach out into love with someone who needs it. He also uses what he has, doesn't he? What's in his hands? And when you read the story, you see that he's got some oil and wine. He puts them on the man's wounds. He's got some bandages. He puts the man on his donkey. He doesn't go off and get the stuff. It's just what he's got in his hands. He uses it for God's purposes. And he takes him to an inn and he pays for him. He used some of his holdings, doesn't he? His home, his hands, his holdings. He's using them all in this story. He gives 2 silver coins to the man and he helps in need. He's sharing what he's got with people in time of need. So the attitude of his heart is to see this injured person as a person who's a person like himself and to treat him like he would like to be treated. And at the end of the story, Jesus says to the expert, now go and do the same. He's challenging the expert. Look at this despised Samaritan. He's more merciful than you. He says, go and do likewise. I think Jesus is saying, if you do the things, if he went and did these things, then it would be that two-way process, wouldn't it? His heart would get softened and shaped. So if you go and show love and mercy, in the process, you become a loving and merciful person. And that is the transformation of the Christian life, isn't it? That's why we follow Christian disciplines, because we want them to work on us and turn us into the sort of people that God had in mind for us to be. And that's what we do when we come to church and when we follow our Christian lives. But when we look at this story, there were 2 parts, weren't there, to the answer that the expert gave. Now I've put it back up on the slide. The expert picked up on neighbour. What does it mean to be a neighbour? And Jesus uses that. It's what the expert gave him. Jesus takes his words and develops it and tells him about what it means to be a neighbour and to love others. But what about the part where it says, love the Lord your God with all your heart, all your soul, all your strength and all your mind. Jesus doesn't hear, respond to that, but he doesn't have the opportunity. But I think the answer to that is also here in this text, in plain view. If we just take a little step back from where we are in Luke 10, we've just read that passage, and see where Luke has placed it in his orderly account. We know he wrote an orderly account. He has the expert, he has the story of the Good Samaritan. Now, this is a lot more difficult question, unless you're looking at it in a Bible. Do you know what came next after that? Mary and Martha. Very good, Andrew. Well done. He had placed it next to an incident of Mary and Martha, and he's done that for a reason. So let's read the next account together. As Jesus and the disciples continued on their way to Jerusalem, he came to a certain village where a woman named Martha welcomed him into her home. She's opening her home, isn't she? So the place behind closed doors, come in. Her sister Mary sat at the Lord's feet, listening to what he taught. But Martha was distracted by the big dinner she was preparing. She came to Jesus and said, Lord, doesn't it seem unfair to you that my sister just sits here while I do all the work? Tell her to come and help me. But the Lord said to her, my dear Martha, you're worried and upset over all these details. There's only one thing worth being concerned about. Mary has discovered it, and it will not be taken away from her. Now, I think Luke placed that little story here because he's giving us the other part of the answer to the question, what must I do to find life? As well as loving our neighbour, we must love God with all our heart, mind, soul and strength. And what does that look like? It looks like Mary sat at the Lord's feet listening to what he taught. And Jesus said, there's only one thing worth being concerned about, and Mary has discovered it. Now, how does this work? Because we've just seen the Good Samaritan getting stuck in and doing good, doing stuff, and the religious people have been chastised in the story for ducking out and just going to the temple to, in their mind, be with God. And now Mary's spending time with God and Martha's being chastised for getting stuck in. Isn't that interesting? So what is it that Mary had discovered? The thing that's the only thing worth being concerned about. I think here it's the presence of God, isn't it? She knew that she was on holy ground, like we just sung in that song. I think in this story, Mary, in those moments, has slipped into the place that humans, us, she, everybody who's ever lived, was created to be, in that close, intimate, undivided presence of God. To help us understand that, we need to just step even further back for a minute and look at the whole story of the Bible. Really, the whole story of the Bible is about, you could finish this sentence in lots of different ways, and you can do that another time, but the whole story is about the struggle of human beings to re-enter the presence of God. It tells us right at the beginning in Genesis that Adam and Eve, when God created the world, Adam and Eve walked with God in the cool of each day. And they enjoyed his company, they enjoyed each other's company. That's what humans were created for, to be in the presence of God and live with him and to partner with him in caring for his world and looking after everything in it. That's what they did. It doesn't really matter exactly how we understand the beginning of the world, you know, whether the Garden of Eden was literal or metaphorical, but what we know is that God is behind the creation of the world, and the truths of what it all means are found there in the first book in Genesis. The truth is in the meaning that we see there. In the beginning, there was presence and there was partnership. But as we know, it didn't last. Things changed. And if you read the story, the immediate presence of God was lost. And not only that, but work became something that was hard and unrewarding. That's the bad news. Now, in the whole story of the Bible, can read it all through, the whole story of the Bible points to the fact that one day people will again live in that unfettered presence of God, when in the new earth. There'll be like no barriers and God will be there. We won't need the sun because the glory of God will light the place. It'll be like that. That's where we're headed. We've come from it, and the story arc of the whole of the world, the whole of time, finishes in a sort of in that place of presence. But what's happened in between? Now, what's happened in between is the story of the Bible. The Bible shows us that to start with, after things went wrong, the presence of God was limited only to a few particular places. In the Old Testament, it was in the tabernacle, it was in the temple in Jerusalem. But then God came to earth himself. He came. He came in the person of Jesus to dwell amongst us, it says. God with us, to presence himself with us in the form of a person. And that helps us to glimpse this bigger story. It's him being there is like a foretaste of what's to come. It's not completely uncovered. It's not unveiled. He's limited in the place of a person, but he's still God. And I think in that moment, Mary discovered it. It was such a precious thing. The only thing worth being concerned about is being there in the presence of God, and she knew it. And that's a moment not to be taken away from her. Jesus saw that she was there. She was in the now and not yet, the seeing what was to come in that moment there. I'm sure some of the rest of the time she was just off doing her life, but she had experienced what she was created for in that moment. The only thing that really matters is to know the presence of God. So, is that all we should do if we love God with all our hearts? Is that what we should do? Sit at the feet of Jesus and be in his presence. It does sound appealing, but where does doing fit in that case? Where does the work fit in? What about Martha with her dinner? Should she be not doing it at all? I mean, I have matters of sympathy for Martha, because it's very easy to tell the woman slaving away in the kitchen, isn't it, to stop making a fuss and just get the meal on the table, which I expect in those days was very much a women's job and the men didn't really know what was involved. So is that the message? We shouldn't be doing stuff. We should be just sitting at Jesus' feet. Or is there like a different way that Martha can be doing it? Well, I'm going to share with you something that I came across recently, which is a very interesting Hebrew word. Now, I'm not a Hebrew expert, and this is what I've learned. I'm just going to share it with you. It's a Hebrew word called avad. Ah, there it is. And it means to work or to serve. And it's the word which is used to do with when Adam and Eve were tending the Garden of Eden. So the work was life-giving and flourishing. You know, they valued it, and it spoke to them, and they loved it. It built them up. It gave them purpose, and they had meaning in it. But interestingly, it's also the word that was used for the work of the Israelites when they were in Egypt, and they served as the Egyptians as slaves. But that work was slavery. It led to drudgery and death, and it was like mind-numbing, dull. It didn't give them life. So this word avad, or work, it can feel like freedom or slavery, depending on who we avad or serve. And I think here, Martha is feeling that her work is a bit slavish, isn't she? And Jesus is saying to her, don't be driven by all that stuff, Martha. Knowing God's presence is the most important thing. And then when you work from that place of presence, your work is full of life and fruitfulness. He says, doesn't he, that when you share the yoke with Jesus, the burden that you feel is light. It's not a slavery burden that you're driven. It's a work which is fruitful and brings bounty into our lives and blessing. So we find out that bringing our hearts to God, first of all, it's about his presence. It's about knowing and loving God and knowing how to enter his presence and be in the place that we were always meant to be. And secondly, from there, it's about learning how to partner with God in our avad, how we work and serve, how we use our homes and our hands and our holdings so that we bless the world and we bring fruitfulness and life to it, so that we can get stuck in with God's work, sharing it with him, partnering with him to bring healing and restoration and mercy and love and all those other great qualities that represent God. That's what the Samaritan was doing, wasn't it? As he was partnering with God. That's what that young woman was doing in a way when she was sitting on the platform and just saying what she knew to the person next to him. I've got something and I can show you the way. It means that we reflect God's nature into the world. And as we do that, we ourselves are transformed into more of his nature. We become the people he intended us to be as we work through the things that he does with us. Now, in a few minutes in the church meeting, we're going to be looking in particular at what we do, aren't we, as our partnership with God. But we really want to be doing everything, don't we, from that place of presence. So I thought we'd just end this talk by listening to a song and taking a moment to glimpse that precious place that Mary found that's available to us, that Jesus promised that his presence would always be with us to the very end of the age. Since he died and sent his Holy Spirit, we can experience his presence just as Mary did. We can glimpse what it's going to be like in the future and pull it into our now. So let's just take a moment to know God's presence before later on we go on to be thinking about all that we're doing here in church.